Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another one of our special Christmas episodes celebrating the 12 days of the Comic Source. And I am privileged to have my friend Rocky from Comic Boom join me on this episode to talk a little comic book content creator conversation. So, Rocky, welcome back to the podcast.
It's great to be here. It's great to be here, Jace. It's the Christmas season, and it might be 2020, but it's still the Christmas season, and let's have some fun.
Yeah. And I think Rocky and I were both so grateful for the supporters we have on social media, whether that be YouTube or Twitter or downloading our podcasts or episodes, the content we produce. Because speaking for myself, I mean, the whole reason I started doing this is because I love comics, and this is one of the first comic book content creator conversations we're putting out there for you all to listen to. And they will eventually be a series, and we'll do them beyond the Christmas season as well, but it'll eventually be a series of podcasts where I invite people that create comic book content, reviews or what have you, and put it out there and talk to them about why they do it. Like, I certainly don't make any money. It costs me a significant amount of money to maintain my website, to host my actual media content online on Libsyn, and certainly is a huge time investment. And so why do we do it? So I'll start off by asking you, Rocky, remind everybody what you do, what content you're creating, where they can find you on the internet, and then we can kind of transition into, how you got started and what made you decide to do it.
Well, sure. I have a YouTube channel called Comic Boom. That's Comic Boom with an exclamation mark. I'm just approaching 1,000. I am definitely a small time creator, and I'm probably, ironically enough, one might be inclined to ask why is Jace talking to me if I have under 1,000 subscribers. I think I have one thing that I can contribute, and that is I certainly know how to make content, and I know how to grow an audience by virtue of the fact that I haven't grown mine, because I'm balancing another life. I'm very busy at my day job, but I find the time to put money and effort into this fledgling little YouTube channel, and I can't believe the social life, although it's a social life online, that I get to express myself, and I've met so many people, certainly like yourself, Jace, like Dark Knight, Professor Bill, Comic Book University, shout out to them, a whole slew of others on YouTube. It really is a community, and it's so inspiring to find people that also love comic books, because I got to tell you, growing up, it was a solitary experience for me collecting comic books. I didn't have a lot of friends that read comics, and I have more friends at the age of 51 who read comics now than I ever did in my entire life. And that is something that's really grown, especially in 2020. That the bright side, if there's going to be some from the pandemic, is that with people going online, is that you really get to express yourself and you meet so many people online. And so that's really the inspiration that you get to do this.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. So there was one other kid in my class at elementary school that collected comics, but he wasn't as passionate about it as I was. And certainly, you we're of a similar generation, Rocky. And you remember, like, you didn't talk about the fact that you read comics. There weren't all these movies and TV shows. It wasn't at the center of pop culture. It wasn't cool to read comics, and so you kind of kept it under your hat. And even if there were other people that read comics, you might not even be aware. You couldn't have that connection. And, even now it is at the center of pop culture, but, having moved from my hometown, where I did eventually have a good group of friends that read comics, here in Phoenix, I haven't met a lot of people personally that read comics and that I can interact with on even a weekly basis. And so I agree with Rocky 100%. The fact that there's an online community, you can connect to people, because now what's happened, comic books at the center of pop culture, so many movies, TV shows, people having discovered them, and now it's a cool thing to do. What's interesting about it is now you have subsections. It used to be, if you found somebody else that read comics, you just bonded over that. But now it's like, you can find other people that read comics that all of a sudden you may not necessarily bond over that, because, oh, well, they just like this. They're a Superman fan or a Batman fan or an X-Men fan. But with the way social media is, you can find that group that you fit into. and you can talk about what you love, whether it's following characters or a company or creators. You know, there's a huge Valiant community. You know, you can be a Marvel zombie, you can be more on the DC side of things. And it's really opened up a whole new world. And there's a whole new generation that don't understand, you know, when Rocky and I talk about, well, it wasn't necessarily something you talked about collecting comics growing up. Wouldn't you say that's true, Rocky?
Oh, it was very, well, yeah, it was. And it was the oddest thing. I remember the one thing I would take issue with is that I wasn't an alpha male growing up, but I was not the nerdy type either. I mean, I actually did have a lot of, you know, I mean, not to sound egotistical, but I really enjoyed school and high school. I had a fun time. I mean, I had a lot of friends and it was almost like a badge of honor. Every now and then, you know, some girl would mention, so like you collect comics, eh? So what's that like? Or so it would always be an interesting talk piece because they had no idea. Well, what you collect comics? So what do you read? And so I was never insulted by it. No one, it was just that nobody ever did it. And I had nobody to talk to about it. And I got to tell you, a large part of my collection in those early years were people who felt they grew out of comics gave me theirs. I mean, nowadays that's unheard of because comic books, a lot of people don't collect comics, but they know the value of an old comic book.
Right.
Everybody's keeping everything and hoarding everything old nowadays. But back then in the early 80s, you know, man, I'd have my dad's clients from his shop come in and just drop boxes of comics. I heard your kid collects comics and they were just dumping. And so I got old Wyatt Earp and Lone Ranger and all these things in back boxes, Gold Key, Star Trek, all from that experience. But so there's some pro. The pro is that I managed to acquire a nice little collection that I still have. The con is that I couldn't really bond and share it with a lot of people when I was younger, other than my brother who grew out of it when he hit about 13, 14.
Yeah. See, that's the difference. See, you Canadians are so nice up there. You know, nobody teased you, but here, you know, when I was growing up, man, you would get teased. You would get teased, you know, especially like by the time you got to junior high. Oh, those comics, those are for babies, you know, those are for little kids. So you kept it under your hat here. And, you know, and this is right around the time when really, when you look at the comic book industry, for me, that junior high, that's right around the time where comics really took a turn to be more adult. You know, we're talking, you know, 1986, Return of the Dark Knight from Frank Miller, Watchmen from Alan Moore. You know, these were adult books. These were really sophisticated pieces of art, you know, Killing Joke being another one around that time. And it's just too bad. And obviously people realize the value now, both artistically and like you said, monetarily. And yeah, you don't see people just giving away comics anymore the way they used to.
No, I remember feeling really good about myself collecting comics when pop culture really started to appreciate comic books and the movies became more popular and everything else. You know, that expression, it's chic to be geek. You know, it was nice to see all these girls pretend to be geeks or all these people nowadays yeah. who pretended to know that they know what a comic book looks like or they know what a comic book smells like or that feel of that particular type of graphic paper and all that jazz. So it's really nice to see the comic book pop culture really kind of exploding, even though people aren't really buying the comics as much as they should. It's wonderful to see the recognition, and because it really does keeps me young. And you know, relating to the YouTube channel, I wanted an outlet so bad. When I started watching YouTube channels and I saw more and more people talking comic books on YouTube, man, I had to get in on it, and just to express myself. And I remember the first few my first few YouTube channels, which I've certainly deleted since then. But I was just I looked like a sort of like a deer in the headlights. I wasn't sure. Sort of like, is this on? Right. Hello, anybody out there? It's like, I mean, the great thing about a YouTube channel now is that you can experiment. You can experiment and have fun. There's no judgment. Anybody can you know, grow a channel. There's so many people out there giving advice, being helpful advice. And it's a really wonderful community to be part of.
Yeah, it's so interesting too, that corner of the comic book fandom has grown because things are, the landscape is so interesting to me right now. You know, you mentioned all of a sudden it was, you know, chic to be geek kind of thing. And it almost like the pendulum swung farther over, you know, long time comic book fans like us, you know, 12-year-old Rocky, 12-year-old Jace would be over the moon to hear, oh, there's going to be a Avengers movie, Iron Man movie, Hulk, you know, Batman versus Superman, all that stuff, to be able to go and watch it, X-Men, Spider-Man. And so, yeah, excitement at first, but then for a certain subsection, and there are times I felt this more than others, you felt like the pendulum swung too far. And all of a sudden people that didn't have any knowledge of the characters and have any knowledge of the stories of the books felt like they were taking ownership of it to some extent and didn't really know anything about it. And they're out there on the you know, social media channels, and they're saying things that are blatantly wrong. And all of a sudden you have, you know, legitimate longtime comic readers who are getting angry because they feel like things have been appropriated. And what I would say to them is, man, just relax. Everybody is, there's room for everybody. As long as these stories are being created, just because something new comes along, some new version of a hero, and it might be different than the comic book stories, it doesn't invalidate your stories. It doesn't invalidate the part of the character or stories about the character that you love. They still exist. It hasn't erased them from history. But it was interesting to see, because as things have shifted, we've seen sort of a change in what I would call comic book journalism, which has always been kind of a, you know, weird thing. Comic book journalism, we had Comic Book News, CBR, Comic Book Resource was a big one for a long time, but from Jonah Weiland, that you could rely on for good objective reviews and such. But all of a sudden, with comics being at the center of pop culture, you saw a lot of these sites get snapped up by big online media conglomerates. And they became more like just a paid advertisement, you know, kind of like Wizard Magazine was back in the day, where whatever they promoted, and back then it was kind of Valiant and Image stuff that took off. And then eventually, as you know, a comic book investor as well, Rocky, you know, the value didn't necessarily hold. And so when you look at things like CBR Now, Comic Vine is another one, comicbook.com, another one, they focus so much on TV and movie stuff because that's where the clicks are. And it's kind of tough now if you're looking for objective, real reviews and news about the industry that's legitimately about comics and not all about all the other pop culture stuff. So I know that was a part of the reason that I got into doing it, and I just focused on the comics rather than talking about the movies and TV show kind of stuff. And I don't begrudge people that get into comics because of that, or just, you know, follow the MCU or just follow the Marvel TV shows. Like what you like, man. And if you don't like something, change the channel. I'm all for that, you know, freedom of choice, certainly. But did that factor into your decision at all? And how do you feel about, you know, quote unquote, comic book journalism these days?
Well, I think comic book journalism, well, I think it's genuine comic book journalism has probably come under as much attack as standard journalism nowadays. Everything seems to be in a state of chaos. But to answer your question, I think that comic book journalism has frankly gone, it's harder to find. I actually think that genuine comic book journalism is actually being done by guys like yourself. And I know this sounds ridiculously egocentric, but you know, Dark Knight and I have a channel, and him and Professor Bill and I, the three of us, we're starting a channel where we're analyzing comic books, and we're you know, it's more analytical. And frankly, it's, well, you know, more to your point, I think that in many ways we're just as much a minority now as maybe we were when we were young. It's just that now the focus on comic books is more on the licensing side, on the pop culture side. How can this licensed character make me money? How can this sell more pajamas? How can this get more people into the theaters or streaming now or with the pandemic? And in many ways, I think, because it's always an open question to me, are comic books actually more popular? Because even though we have the top box office movies that are doing phenomenally well, and yet comic books, yeah, they're selling still, but they're not really hitting up the sales charts you know, proportionately in my mind. And so it's always an open question to me. So I still, I relate very much to where you're coming from. You know, I listen to your podcast and your interviews, and that's kind of why I'm into comic books. I'm not a writer. I'm just a genuine fan who loves the hobby and loves listening to writers and creators talk about their craft. And I just, I love it. I remember back in the day where Newsarama and Comic Book Resources, I could actually get a decent interview out of them and they were more objective. Now they're handing out 10 out of 10s like it's Halloween candy every time
they read a
comic book. I mean, it's ridiculous. Well, we've talked about this. We've been on different streams. You and I with Dark Knight together, we've talked about this, but people have to be, I think that if there's one thing the comic book industry, obviously in the pandemic right now, it's struggling. But I do think that more healthy, constructive criticism and it being more critical of itself and its own creations would probably be helpful. But frankly, we can say that of the entire media world right now and the corporate world.
Yeah, and you're right. It's so interesting. You look at things like Newsarama and CBR. Those are the two big ones that come to mind that started out as basically message boards for fans. And because they were passionate about it and because they, you know, wanted to analyze it and be objective, it did have value. It did have merit because they were objective and they did give you, sort of the truth, if you will. You know, obviously it's always going to be subjective when you're reviewing something. Somebody might like something more than, you know, another person. And then this is a little bit before comics really hit, you know, the movies hit and it exploded. Sales were doing relatively well in the mid 2000s, especially after the crash of the 90s. And that's when I feel like, at least in the most recent years, where the comic industry sort of peaked. You know, obviously it still weren't selling like they did back in, you know, in the 50s and 60s when there wasn't instant online entertainment and so many competing avenues of entertainment and digital, you know, instant stream and this and that makes it much tougher now because there are so many choices and people just don't read as much as they used to. So forgetting about that, when, you know, comics were on newsstands, the whole distribution model was different, things sold millions of copies. That mid 2000s was really, for me, the peak of the industry most recently. And that was when so many publishers were realizing that these things that had started, these fledgling sites like Newsarama and CBR, they had so much value to them because people were doing it on their own. They were doing what we're doing right now. You know, they were spending their own money. The internet was relatively new and they were out there creating content, putting it out there, reviewing comics. And the publishers realized this and they realized it was an outlet. They realized this internet thing was here to stay and they could reach more comic book readers by giving those sites access to their creators and, access or press copies of their books and that and such. And it was really kind of the golden age of online comic book journalism. But then, like I said, when that switch was flipped, 2008, Iron Man comes out, MCU is launched, everything explodes. You know, the internet had kept growing by leaps and bounds. All of a sudden it becomes about, getting traffic to your site, online advertising. And as anything, when a bunch of money becomes involved, you're going to get these, you know, venture capitalists, they create these internet media companies. And I don't begrudge Jonah Weiland for selling this site that he started. I mean, when you think about it, it's really, he sold nothing for something, right? Like it's nothing physical. He certainly put his blood, sweat, and tears into it for many, many years. And why not sell it for, you know, seven figures, eight figures, whatever it is that he got. I mean, guy's set for life. That's amazing. I would have done the same thing, but that along with Newsarama being sold a few times. And all of a sudden what you have is they're just looking to generate clicks. What's going to generate the most clicks? Like I said earlier, movie and TV news. And they, the publishers, all of a sudden, they're not giving them as much access unless they're, you know, it's got to have the right PR spin, you know? So that's where all the 10 out of 10s, you want to make sure you stay in the good graces of the publishing companies, because now all the comic book publishers have a PR department that you have to go through to schedule interviews. Whereas in the early days, it was go right to the creator and, hey, you want to come on my podcast? Can I do an interview with you? Oh, sure, no problem. And it's still that way for some creators.
Yeah.
But especially at DC now, if you try to go, oh, you got to go through DC's PR department. I'm not allowed to, go on. Unless you're, Tom King or Scott Snyder, then you can do what you want because you're kind of the golden boy. But the landscape is so different now. And I can't help but feel like those comic book journalism sites, they've lost, at least in my opinion, a lot of the hardcore fans that kind of earn the know, they've lost a lot of credibility. I never go to CBR anymore. I still go to Newsarama a couple times a week. But man, when I, mid-2000s, 2003 to maybe 2008 or 9, that was my homepage on my browser was CBR. Yeah. Like I'd turn my computer on or go sit down on my computer. That was the first page I went to get my news. To find out what's going on in the comic book world. And it's just not that way anymore.
I agree. CBR News Around were fantastic. And I have to say, if the closest site that approaches comic book journalism in my mind would probably be Comics Beat with Heidi McDonald. Mm-hmm. I think that is a fairly good site. Not all the writers she has in there are top notch, but certainly Heidi's articles are good. And her podcast is good as well. I listen to that from time to time. And, it's the same rules still apply. The best writers have the best approach to the media. I mean, you look at, Donny Cates, Scott Snyder, whether you like their work or not, they engage the audience. Mm-hmm. They utilize social media and they have a passion. And passion projects with good writers still sell, still get the attention. It doesn't matter even if they work for a corporate big, quality still matters. I just find generally, and I'm sure you'd agree, that one thing about that golden era of that early to mid 2000s where Marvel Knights came out with Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada, Marvel was out of bankruptcy and there was something magical about Marvel Knights. They saved, Jimmy Palmiotti, Joe Quesada single-handedly saved Marvel with just plain good quality story. And there's something about being down in the dumps that I think almost inspires people. It's like, it's almost like they got to work harder because they got to work harder to get noticed. Mm-hmm. And now there's, I'm going to keep this positive because I want Future State to do well and what have you, but I get a sense that DC's a little bit worried about Future State. They've already made some advertisements about who the next Batman is, and they're really hoping that sales are going to increase. And, they got a lot at stake. And the bottom line is, I don't care. You can tweet all you want and you can create all the hype you want and you can change the genders and the color of the skins of the characters all you want. At the end of the day, I just want a good story and I want the passion there. And if that passion is there and it's written by a great writer who's going to engage the public. I mean, I'm just like that 7-year-old, 12-year-old I was back in the day. I'll pick up your comic book. And look, now there's 2021 can be so fantastic. We're going to be out of the pandemic. We're going to all be vaccinated and we're all going to be ready to buy and read more comic books.
Yeah, so, for sure. A lot of people talk about the Spanish flu pandemic, 1918, that was followed by the Roaring Twenties, which was really a positive time for a lot of nations around the world. And that could be what we're in line for in a couple of years, God willing. I've heard here good things about Future State from retailers I know, from retailers that own shops in California, and then my own retailer here. One of the good things DC did, they made it all returnable. I think there is a lot of worry on AT&T's part because the last time they did something like this was Convergence and the sales were dismal. And they know that this is 2 months of something that's not necessarily going to continue. This is repackaged and repurposed 5G stuff. And I think certainly they've encouraged their writers and creators to, hey, make it matter. Take things that are in this Future State miniseries and continue it. Hint at things to come in the regular books. So I'm excited for it, but at the same time, I do kind of feel like, what's the point of this? Oh, so it is just AT&T paid for the material, so you're going to use it. And I totally get that. But at the same time, it feels like an interruption to, you know, the regular universe. And then again, I flip over to the other side and say, you know, play devil's advocate and say, well, yeah, but so much editorial turnover. A lot of people are working their last days at DC editorial, you know, right now, this month. So maybe they do need a month or two to get their ducks in a row. But I spoke to Tom King the other day. That's another one of these.
Right on.
12 Days of the Comic Source podcast that you'll have. That one's going to be released on Christmas Day. Tom was talking about, hey, you know, it is a solitary kind of isolated job, you know, a comic book writer. You're at home anyway. So the pandemic really hasn't affected him, other than he and a lot of other creators he knows, they've had so much time to be home, be focused, be buckled down, because they literally can't leave the house. He's so far ahead on things. And I think that's the case with a lot of people. So hoping that this means as we come out of the pandemic, as Rocky said, with people ready to get out there and discover new things and explore and be happy, that we're going to get a lot of the product that was created during the pandemic at that same time. So I'm hoping that is the case. So I wonder, I know you're good friends with your retailer, Rocky. Has he said anything about Future State, good or bad? Does he have a lot of pre-orders?
I do get along with him quite well. And he's been very good with his customers. He made sure we all had a list, and he made me, it was kind of comical. He actually forcefully gave me a piece of paper and a pen, and he said, tell me what you want. And I looked at it and I handed it back to him. I said, just give me it all.
Yep. I did the same thing. I was like, you know what? It's just 2 months, you know. So I know some of the books are coming out twice a month, so some of them are going to be four issue. A lot of them are just going to be two. But I'm like, you know what? It's only two issues. I remember when New 52 came out, I got every series for the first three issues, and then I, you know, decided based on those what I wanted to keep going with. You know, this is kind of, I didn't with Convergence. I just left it all alone. I got a couple books here and there. For whatever reason, I didn't go in on that one. But I thought, you know what? Some of the stuff sounds pretty good. Let me just give all of it a try. Why not? Yeah.
That's right. And I would just add to that, you know, one of the high marks of 2020 has been, you know, focusing on the positive again, is the spec market. The comic book spec market has absolutely exploded in 2020. I don't know. I guess it's probably because people are at home and they got nothing to spend their money on, so they're going to spend it on eBay and they happen to buy more comic books. But you got comic books like Miles Morales exceeding 2,500 bucks. You got the Star Wars franchise exploding, all the comic books, the first appearance of Thrawn just crossed the $1,500 threshold for 9.8. I mean, it's just been absolutely insane. And to be very blunt, the speculator side of me, which I sort of grew into a part-time speculator as well, sometimes full-time, quite frankly, when it comes to Future State, it's absolutely loaded with potentially future superstars that we're going to likely be seeing in movies or in comic books. And it's impossible to know which characters are going to hit, which ones are going to not. Even a character that might be badly written in Future State, it's still a key appearance, and it might be written better later down the road. Yep. I mean, look, maybe I'm not a big fan of Bendis's Superman, but his Naomi was certainly, I would say, acceptable. I mean, it was, you know, it was good enough that it's, if you don't like Bendis, it's going to be written by other. Naomi is a character that's only going to grow. She's going to have her own series, I understand, coming out. So from a speculator point of view, which is really, it, the more you're into comic books, it's inevitable you're going to spec about something.
Yeah.
Even if you just collect what you love eventually has value. That's the number one rule of comic collecting. You and I both know that. That's the best advice we can give to someone coming into the hobby. The best advice, collect what you love. If something catches the eye, just buy it. Don't think about the dollar bill on it or whether it's going to grow in value. Frankly, the speculation will come because it can't be avoided.
Yeah, I dip my toe in every once in a while. In fact, so before the Yara Floor, and for those not familiar, that's the new Amazonian Wonder Woman, a person of color. Before it got announced that she was having a TV show, she was going to be the star of the Wonder Girl TV show. We did find out that she was going to be in Future State. And prior to that, you know, we heard 5G, and that drove speculation very early in the year with Wing number 19, first time Luke Fox showed up in DC Comics, and you know he was supposed to be the next Batman, and so there was speculation there. Jonathan Kent, and this is a kind of goes with what you were saying, Rocky. It doesn't have to be written well or well received. I just talked about how poorly Convergence did, but Convergence does have the first appearance of John Kent, who in 5G was supposed to be the new Superman. So his first appearance blew up, and so when I heard, okay, there's going to be a new Wonder Woman in 5G. I was already collecting Steve Orlando's Wonder Woman, wondering who it was going to be. It was rumored it was going to be this character, it was going to be that character. Steve Orlando was putting new characters in every other issue, and I was just kind of waiting to hear, because nobody knew that was a character whose spec hadn't hit yet, hadn't blown up. And then 5G goes away, and then you think, oh well, the people that you know spent money on Batwing or John Kent's first appearance, you know, they kind of out of luck. And then we hear Future State, you know, where they're going to recycle all that stuff. And I was listening very carefully. Okay, so who's the Wonder Woman? Oh, it's Yara Flor, possible first appearance in Wonder Woman Annual 4. And I had already bought that because I was reading Steve Orlando's run. But I went right away to eBay, and I got, somebody had three copies, same person selling them. I got all three copies they had for cover price. Yeah. And then, you know, a week later we hear, oh, Wonder Girl TV show, Yara Flor. And all of a sudden now it's, you know, that's much more important to speculators than just, oh, she's going to be in her own comic. Now she's going to have a TV show because we know more eyes are exposed, more demand. And so, yeah, I really lucked out on that one. And then the other thing I really spent a lot of cash on, I've said this on the podcast before this year, was putting together a run of Amazing Spider-Man, which I had.
Yeah, how's that coming? How's that coming?
So it's going really well. I have I got the Holy Grail issue 300 from a friend gifted it to me. An amazing friend. I tried to give him something for it, and he refused to take anything. I did send a Drizzly delivery, which is an online company here in the United States where you can send booze. So I sent him a nice bottle of Whistle Pig bourbon. Rye bourbon to his house, but not only did he give me a great copy's in great shape, it's signed by Stan Lee. It's not graded or not graded or anything, but it's got that that signature. So absolutely amazing. So between issues 200 to the current, I'm missing about less than 20, and most of them are key minor key issues, or there's a few from the not the current run, but the previous run with those Alex Ross covers that they're not expensive. You can get them on eBay for cover price, but then I'm paying double cover because I'm paying for shipping. Yeah. And so I'm like, I'll just wait until conventions come back around or because I can't seem to find a lot where people are like, you know, because that's where you can save the money. That's the one thing on eBay. I always have a budget in mind. Hey, what I want to pay for per issue, and I can get them for that, but then you factor in the shipping and it obviously the price goes up. And then there's a few others like first Anti-Venom. I'm still missing the first Carnage, which that's one that really burns me up because I've almost never sell my comics, but I did sell my Amazing Spider-Man run previously, which is why I decided to rebuild it when the pandemic hit. But I had like eight copies of Amazing Spider-Man 361 because I knew, even you know, when I came out when I was in high school, I just knew this Carnage guy was going to be somebody, was going to be important. I bought eight copies, and they're newsstand copies, you know, that back then I didn't have, there wasn't a comic book shop in my town. And I bought them off the rack at the local 7-Eleven. So I went to every 7-Eleven in town, all four of them, and I bought all the copies of 361. Yeah. And I sold them, man. I sold that run. So there's a few like that that I'm missing. Like I said, it's less than 20. And then from 100 to 200, I have about 40 to 50. I'm about halfway there. And then below 100, I just have a very limited. I have 28, which was actually the first Amazing Spider-Man I bought this year. I've wanted that comic for so long. That's that dark Molten Man cover, which is so hard to get in high grade. And my copy presents like probably like an 8.0, if not higher. But if you open it up, the guy wrote his name in ink on, you know, on top of the front, the first page. So obviously that brings the grade down, but it presents beautifully. Yes. And then I have a few others that are just below 100 that are just like the covers that I like. So I'll get there eventually. It's something fun. I'm content with where I am right now. The rest of them, I'll probably wait Because when there are keys, I have much harder time. Because I'm not really a collector of slabbed books. I don't necessarily like the graded comics. And so when you're talking ungraded comics, you don't really know what you're getting. I mean, that's the whole point of getting a graded comic. You know what you're getting. But I'd like to keep all my comics together in my drawer boxes. And so I prefer to have ungraded copies, but I still want them to be, you know, a good quality copy. And those are ones I'm going to want to be at a show and, you know, look at in person before I pick them up. So what about you, Rocket? Have you filled in any holes? Have you been buying online?
I've actually filled in a number of holes, and I scratched a couple itches, things I was missing from my collection. I filled in like a lot of Silver Age Superman. From the probably mid 1960s through the early 1970s, just that Kurt Swan era. I love Kurt Swan. Darwin Cook is my favorite artist, and tied with him, well, I would put him in second place, probably Kurt Swan. And I just have a love of that era of those comic books. It got me into comic books. When I think back, I remember the bookstore where I got my first where I bought a lot of my comic books early on, where they were just on a pile in the corner. When I think of how many Marvel and Fantastic Four I threw by the wayside to pick up Superman and the Legion of Superheroes, you know, nowadays Marvel Zombies would probably kill me, but I've always been a DC guy mostly. And one thing that I pride in my collection, and you and I can do this because we've been collecting for so long, is and you mentioned it, like your original collection of Amazing was what we could genuinely call pedigree. In other words, we collected it ourselves. Mm-hmm. The copies we owned were our own, and we were the only owners of these copies ever.
Yep.
And so I can say with a lot of pride that I'm so glad I kept my collection, because I'm, you know, for the 90% of my collection, I'm the only one who's ever owned it, of that comic book. And that's really cool to have. I know which ones I've acquired on the side, and there's some that, you know, I'm missing the fourth Superman Flash race. I got the first Superman Flash race, the second, third, and the sixth, seventh, and eighth. But I'm missing the fourth Superman Flash race. So that's I'm trying to fill up that gap. For when I turned 50, my aunt and uncle bought me the first Superman Flash race. It's amazing when you get older and people find out you like comics. My comic shop owner, my retailer, said, you know, he kept all these secrets, and when they threw me a birthday party, the whole room was decorated with comic book paraphernalia of all kinds, and it was all from my retailer. And my retailer told me, goes, yeah, he goes, how many friends do you have? I had an entire week of people coming and asking me, and they actually spent quite a bit, a nice little amount of money in his shop just buying me comic books from the 60s and 70s. So it was a nice little pay. It was a pretty good, that was the first time in my life that I'd ever gotten gifts, because nobody would think of buying comic books for an adult. But I mean, actually, yep. It was probably one of the best, you know, it was one of my favorite birthday parties of all time, because it was quite fun.
Yeah, and like you're 100% right. You know, ROM Space Knight is the first book that I really collected on a month in, month out basis, and I always treasure that run for that reason. You know, and it's why I learned my lesson when I sold that Spider-Man run, and I sold it when the first Spider-Man movie hit, and the prices really jumped up. And I had from right around issue 250 up till whatever the current issue that had come out at that time. I think it was probably in the low 400s or so. And yeah, it bums me out that, you know, because that it had so many keys in it. It had, you know, the first Venom, the first Carnage, all the Hobgoblin stuff, the Todd McFarlane stuff. And it taught me, yeah, I learned my lesson right then. You know, never unless you're just never going to read comics again, yeah, don't sell your books. I mean, it's one thing if you're buying books on spec, you know, that's, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's what you like to do. But don't sell your runs, you know. And I still have, you know, like Incredible Hulk and Iron Man, Captain America. I have giant runs of that stuff that I, you know, bought off the stands. And I've been working on that a little bit too, filling out the, you know, before the Tales of Suspense and Tales to Astonish and things like that. And I have a pretty good Superman run as well, but I don't really have a a very good run of the Superman comic itself. But my action run is, I mean, you know, we're talking what, well over 1,000 issues now, 1,032 yeah. issues. And I have, you know, probably 600-700 is the amount of those issues I have.
That's awesome. That's really good.
Yeah. So I, but I'm wondering, when you said you were filling in your Silver Age Superman, is it the Superman title itself? Is it Action Comics title? Is it both? Or what have you been
It's in? Actually both. Well, I actually, Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, Action Comics and Superman, those three in particular. I also got a nice run of Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, and right up the 20 issues before and the 20 issues after regarding the first Silver Age appearance of Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and there, I got to tell you, there, the thing is about DC, there's not a lot of, the reason why these are still economical to purchase is that the stories are so ridiculous that not a lot of continuity builds around them. Yep. Because Marvel Silver Age are generally worth more because they were written better. I'll admit that they were better written stories in terms of they had continuity. And so there's a lot more keys for mm-hmm. Marvel that collectors want for Marvel Silver Age, as opposed to, I mean, nobody wants to buy an Action Comics where Superman turns into a turtle or, you know, or some yep. nonsense plot line. Right. And so those comic books, you can get those in pristine condition. I mean, you can get a 30, 40, 50 year old comic that's in amazing condition for $5 or $10. Mm-hmm. If you go to these, you know, these comic swaps and these, if you go and go to the right places. And I still maintain that that's exceedingly rare. And I would still say that Wonder Woman comics remain notoriously undervalued. And, you know, even with the Wonder Woman movie coming out, Wonder Woman Silver Age, again, they're nonsense comics and not written well. I mean, Wonder Woman was, it's because of the bad writing of them for so long in the 60s and 70s that a lot of people just ignore them because they're almost laughable in their plot lines. But they're a piece of history, and sooner or later, they're really going to explode. And I'm just waiting for it. Of course, I've been saying that for...
there hasn't been much movement in the price of Wonder Woman comics, I'd say in 20-30 years, but there has been a little bit of movement. I mean, yeah, they're still greatly undervalued.
There has been some movement.
Yeah, there has been a little, because Jimmy Palmiotti, who you and I both know, he collects Wonder Woman, a lot of Golden Age stuff, but some Silver Age too. And he's saying there, he used to have no problem when he went looking, when he decided, I want to fill this hole or that hole in Wonder Woman. He wouldn't have any problem. They're getting, the prices necessarily haven't gone up that much, but they're getting a lot tougher to find.
Yeah. Yeah. No one's parting with their collection. And I will say that often that the prices I find sometimes are a little bit ridiculous. Like, cause the odd time when there's one on eBay, you know, somebody doesn't want to part with something. I mean, they're often asking 5 to 10 times the guide price for a Wonder Woman comic. Which, and it's not a reflection of the market. It's a reflection of the reluctance of the purchaser not wanting to sell it for what it's actually worth.
Yep.
And as a speculator, and this could be another 2-hour topic, but just to cut to the chase, the speculation market it's very fickle to begin with. And it always amazes me that, you know, 80,000 or let's say 40,000 comics of issue one of Stupid Man number one comes out and the variant cover, 40,000 copies are sold, but because 25 people on eBay bought it, paid $15 for it, suddenly it goes up in value because 15 people paid $20 for it, it goes up in value. And the spec market ignores the 40,000 people that paid cover price for it.
Yep.
it's a fickle thing, and you got to be careful when you buy and sell comics. You and I both know that, because you can really get screwed if you're not careful, because it's a very, very, it's best if you have a little bit of experience, or if you don't have any, maybe talk with your retailer or talk with somebody you trust before you really get into it.
Yeah, because you never know what they're going to consider a first appearance. Sometimes it's enough to be in shadow or be in one panel. And then we got Incredible Hulk 180, where Wolverine's in a full splash page on the last page, and that's considered a cameo, and it's 181 where he's actually in the story. that's considered his first appearance. So that's the other thing. The collective collector market decides what the first appearance is. Doesn't matter what the publisher says. Doesn't matter what, you know, person A or person B says. You know, there's arguments about it sometimes. And, you know, eventually they'll settle on one book, and that's the one that takes off, and people decide, hey, this is the one that you're going to want to get your hands on. So yeah, it's a very interesting thing when it comes to that. And yeah, to your point about Silver Age DC not being worth as much, especially compared to Marvel, the other part of it is DC had been, their universe had been established. So you just don't have as many first appearances, especially of villains. You know, if you look at those first Fantastic Fours, or certainly this is the case with Spider-Man, who I think has probably the second best rogues gallery in the comic book world after Batman. You know, those first 50 issues, you're getting, you know, Dr. Octopus, Green Goblin, Kingpin, Shocker, Molten Man, Rhino, Sandman. You know, all these first appearances of these classic villains that continued to plague Spider-Man, and even showed up in other heroes' books. So that's that, like you were saying, Rocky, that drives a lot of the demand for that. That makes those keys. Whereas certainly in Superman comics, you know, Silver Age Superman, you're using a lot of the same villains that you had seen before previously. But when you do get a villain, man, yeah, they're worth a lot. A couple of books on my bucket list right now that are just out of my price range currently, unless I get a real poor copy, that I would love to have is a first Brainiac, first appearance of Brainiac. And one that I actually think is undervalued, and I may pull the trigger on this sometime in the next few months, because I think I can get a decent copy for around $300 or $400, is the first appearance of General Zod, which goes for less than $500. The Brainiac, that's, you know, you're talking a couple thousand.
What is what issue is the first appearance of General Zod? What issue is that?
I want to say it's Adventure Comics. I want to say 236, maybe 263. So it's Adventure Comics. So that's part of the reason it's not as well known, isn't as sought after as Brainiac. You know, that's in Action Comics, and I'm just gonna
add here another positive note that for this upcoming Christmas season and for the new year, I'm looking forward to filling more gaps in my collection and loving Superman, and I hope Mark Waid's on Superman, and God bless Bendis. I wish him well and good tidings on other titles. And my hope beyond hope is that Mark Waid, despite being at times a divisive figure and controversial figure, the fact is that Mark Waid's heart is Superman, and I think he was born to write Superman. And I'm really, really hoping that he does a stellar job. And by chance, have you been able to interview him or get him on your list?
You know, I've talked to Mark. I know Mark. I've talked to Mark several times, and we always talk about having him on the show. But what we want to do is we want to do an in-depth interview about his Irredeemable series. It's one of my favorite series of all time. In fact, my hardcover Irredeemable, like absolute edition that I have, Mark signed it for me and wrote, he's going to be a sensation, which if you're familiar with that story, that's the last line in the book when it gets very meta, and Saturn dies, and or Plutonian rather dies, and his essence goes out in the universe and supposedly infects these two Jewish boys in Cleveland. Obviously the implication there is this is Siegel and Schuster, and they start to say, you know, one of the boys races to the other boy's house, and he starts designing it right there, and one of the boys says to the other, he's going to be a sensation. So Mark signed it, personalized it to me, wrote he's going to be a sensation. And one of these days it's going to come on. We're going to talk about that. Yeah. But I Mark and I are very, very similar. I agree with you. He does rub some people the wrong way, but when it comes to Superman and our opinions about him as a character and what he means overall in pulp culture and history, we're very simpatico. So yeah, he'll be on someday. And certainly if we're ever at a show together, Rocky, the three of us, I'll be happy to introduce you.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I'll never forget what Mark, I've said this repeatedly on more than one live stream and podcast, and I'll say it again. Mark Wade, I'll never forget what he said. And I spoke with him. I remember the time I spoke with him, and it was in Calgary, Alberta. The years is sometime in mid 2000. He said to me something that I've quoted him. He said, every generation deserves to have a comic book speak to them. And it's something that I've always taken with me. And I've always, the part of me that will always be in defense of Mark Wade through all the sort of some controversy that he finds himself in, is that it always comes, he's the protector and he's the white knight. And while he might go to some extremes, at the end of the day, he really does have a passion for comic books. He really does want to give people an experience, and he wants to include everybody. And every creator I know, when they speak of Mark Wade, most of them, they love him. He's always giving advice. He's always helpful. He's a collaborator. I think he's done a great job at Marvel. I respectfully disagree with some of my fellow YouTubers who don't like his work at Marvel. I quite enjoyed Doctor Strange. I liked his work on Avengers. I liked his work on Incredible Hulk when he did that. And he's finally coming back to DC, and this is so awesome. I just wish more people were more excited, because, man, I think his birthright was unfortunately overlooked, because the timing of it was wrong and it was overridden by Jeff Johns' Secret Origins on Superman. But everybody on this planet, Mark Wade has forgotten more about Superman than most people on this planet will ever know about Superman. I mean, it's just incredible. The guy was born to write Superman, and I got to be honest, my expectations are probably too high, but man, I really enjoyed his Superman story in the last days of the DC Universe, in the latest issue that just came out. I really enjoyed that, how he focused on hope and that homage to Christopher Reeve with the anti-life infected Superman using the, you know, going back in time repeatedly 1,000 times just to save as many people as possible and do the impossible. That's Mark Wade. Mark Wade gets it. He gets that character. And man, what a great way to start off the new year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was going to actually ask you if you read that last day's Superman story, because Manny, who comes on the podcast periodically, who you also know, he's not a Superman fan at all. He's not a character that he's really engaged in. But that was actually his favorite. I mean, it was his book of the week, was that last stories of DCU from Death Metal. But even among those, you know, obviously book of the week, so we thought all of them were great. But the Superman story was his favorite, and this is coming from someone who's not a Superman fan. Yeah, it was absolutely spectacular, and I agree with you. I was hoping that out of the Comic Expo, the Brazilian Comic Expo, where we got so much news about what's coming after Future State, which we've all been wondering, we got so much news about, you know, what's to come, who the creative teams are going to be for Green Lantern, you know, Teen Titans, Batman, obviously we knew was going to be the same. Wonder Woman is getting a new creative team. But the news that I really wanted was who's following Bendis on Superman, my favorite character. And they're still keeping it under wraps. I too hope that it's Mark Wade. I think I have more tempered expectations than you do. But knowing Mark, and as much as he loves the character, and I just feel like as a Superman fan, it's something we have been waiting for so long. If I have any worry about Mark doing Superman, is if reverence for the character may go too far. But I think Mark's a professional enough writer to kind of separate his fan side and his love of the character from, you know, the technical aspect of writing it. So I'll tell you this, Rocky, there's no way it's going to be worse than the stuff that Bendis did.
No, well that I already know. It's Mark Wade's never written anything that I've hated, let alone disliked. And I'm reminded of the words Mark Wade once said in an interview, that after he wrote Birthright, and it wasn't as well received as I think it as it could have been. He said he likened it. He said it was like getting a chance to play at Carnegie Hall and you finally do, but nobody showed up.
Yeah. See, this is the thing about Birthright that, like you mentioned yourself, the timing was just wrong because Jeff Johns came, like if Birthright had just been left alone, if they hadn't messed with it and there hadn't been, you know, other, basically other reboots, other crises in the DC universe that led to other reboots and needing to move things along and having Jeff Johns come in and do Secret Origin with Gary Frank, which is also a great story. If Birthright could have been left alone,
yeah,
for a period of time, the way John Byrne's Man of Steel was, because you know as well as I do that John Byrne's Man of Steel wasn't. It was initially very well received when it first hit because hey, we're modernizing Superman for the '80s. Has a very '80s feel to it. John Byrne's art, he's at the peak of his artistic powers in that Superman run that he did. But by, I would say, the early 90s, people weren't looking back fondly on that. It was kind of messy in the things that it did to continuity because, Byrne being ever the stubborn creator that he is, there can't be any Superboy. There's not any other Kryptonians. You know, it messed with the Legion of Superheroes and how they could exist. And, eventually the way DC did things, they kind of shot themselves in the foot, didn't reboot everything cleanly. And, you know, they ended up having to do zero hour to clean things up.
Yeah.
But then another 10 or 15 years go by. And certainly now when people look back, you look back at Man of Steel and that John Byrne era as classic because it got to just exist on its own for a while. And people got to look at it on its own merits. Birthright never had that. It got erased so quickly that it was kind of a footnote. And people
right. And I do think, and again, I could talk at length on this. I initially had issues with some of the aspects of Birthright. In particular, I did find artistically, I found it a little jarring. This was actually one of the first early works of Lineal Yule. One of his first artistic works. He did a series called Silent Dragon for DC just before that. And he would go on, of course, to much fame with Marvel. But his artistic style for Superman was different at the time. And his art, I thought, got much better following Birthright. But it was a different artistic look for Superman because it was definitely different than the traditional DC style at the time. And I don't think it was as well received as they were hoping for. And I'm pretty sure Mark Waid was disappointed about that because I think he handpicked Lineal Root U, if I remember correctly what he stated in an interview. But in any event, I think that sometimes great ideas, you know, the time has to be right. You know, there's nothing more stronger than an idea whose time has come. And it's about time Mark Waid writing Superman. It's about time that idea became reality. And I sure as hell hope that DC has doing that because I know it's not formally mentioned yet, but it's got to be the worst kept secret. He's got to be the one writing Superman, hands down. And if he's not writing both Superman and Action, put Tom Taylor in Action.
I was going to ask you who else you might choose. Tom Taylor has stated on social media many times that he would love to get a crack at Superman. It's one of his favorite characters. So he would be your second choice for,
oh my God. I just think Mark Waid and Tom Taylor, I really think that those two probably together have more of an intuitive understanding of DC characters and how to write them. Certainly more in modern times, Tom Taylor, but Mark Waid, I don't think Mark Waid could ever forget he has an intuitive sense for DC, the DC universe. And man, put Taylor and Waid on Superman, that would just be unbelievable. Because let me tell you something, it used to be Superman that was the heart and soul of the DC universe, but now it's all Batman this, Batman that. I really think that the soul of DC Comics needs to be Superman again. And the world needs Superman right now. And I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but I am kind of intending to be melodramatic because we need some good melodrama instead of the other type of political melodrama the world's infused with right now. And we need Superman more than ever. And Mark Waid embodied it perfectly in that story of the last of the stories of the DC universe. When Superman, that one panel just shows Superman flying in that Christopher Reeve pose, you know, we need hope, or they need hope. I mean, he was speaking to us right through the bloody page and stating the obvious. We've been telling DC that for 3 years, but we've been getting nothing but dark this, death metal this, darkness that, doom versus justice this, doom winning, justice losing. Enough already. I love my heroes and I want them to get a few wins under their belt. And I hope that's what 2021 gives us.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get any argument from me. You know, I was talking about Mandy earlier and how Superman is not his favorite character. Batman is. We talk all the time about Batman being the center of the DCU. But even he, you know, we have said something similar. You know, you talk about it being the soul of the DCU. Even Manny, this giant Batman fan, his favorite character, understands that as go the Superman titles, so goes the DCU. Look at the best period of the DC universe in the last 10 years was that rebirth. And that those titles, Action by Dan Jurgens and Superman, focusing on the relationship between Superman and John Kent by Peter Tomasi and Peter Gleason, those were the first Superman titles that Manny was reading issue in and issue out and was enjoying. And that was when I convinced him. He's like, you're right. As go the Superman titles. When the Superman titles are clicking, the DC universe as a whole works. Batman might be the you know engine that drives the car, but Superman is the heart and soul. And I know I'm mixing my metaphors, but I'm not a writer, so
I know what you mean.
Sue me. But yeah, when Superman, when it's hope, when Superman titles are going well, it feels like the DC universe is you know running on all cylinders.
No, and, you know, looking forward to 2021, I think that the future can be bright. I'm really hoping we're going to be getting some great stories from the DC Universe. And I'm just, you know, I can look back on 2020. I think it's unfortunate. In 2017, Marvel Comics experienced something quite horrible. They had political chaos in the United States during an event called Secret Empire in their publications, and it was a terrible combination. You had Secret Empire with Hydra, Captain America being a Hydra agent, and it was a PR disaster. And I think for 2020, what's terrible about the DC universe is that regardless of one's view on the quality of the story of death metal and Doom versus Justice in the Justice League, you honestly couldn't have picked a worse time for that story than 2020. Yep. It was, you know, Year of the Villain in 2020, Death Metal in 2020, Doom winning in 2020, and we have a pandemic. I mean, it's, you know, fiction matters. What we read and the decisions that these publications that DC and Marvel makes, the decisions they make when they make these year-long epic decisions on their publishing line. Now, they can't tell the future. Nobody knew we were going to get a pandemic in 2020. No one knew that we were going to have political chaos in 2016 that lasted for 4 years. But I think that all the more reason why these corporate powers that be that own these comic books, I think they got to put a lot more thought into maybe shortening their storylines or having some contingency plans, because we shouldn't be subjected to 2 years worth of doom and gloom in the DC universe, not in a universe where its North Star is the Man of Steel.
I'll add to that, you know, Dan Didio, like him or hate him, you know, God knows the man made mistakes and he'd be the first to admit it, but nobody's a bigger comic fan. No one's more passionate, and losing him at the beginning of the year and throwing all the plans into chaos, you know, good or bad, maybe it was good that 5G didn't happen and now it's being repurposed, but it certainly didn't help with, the direction of DC. And to some extent, I feel like they're not quite as rudderless as I felt like they were when Dan first left. But really the telltale sign, like, get back to me in May or June, after we've had a few months of whatever comes after Future State. And I'll be able to give you kind of my thoughts on what I expect. Like, it has DC righted the ship? Are they headed in the right direction? And a lot of it, I think, is going to go back to who they have writing Superman, like we just said, because that title is so instrumental into the tone and the feel for the DC universe. And although Rocky and I we agree on Tom Taylor and Mark Waid both being excellent choices, I am going to throw one more name out there, Rocky, at you that I also would not mind writing Superman. This creator has been on the show many times, personal friend of mine. also his favorite character is the Man of Steel. He's gotten a chance to write him in Justice League just real briefly, a couple of arcs. But Robert Venditti would be another one who I would love to see on the Man of Steel.
I would have no objection to that. Robert Venditti is someone who, quite frankly, certainly into the beginning of 2020, probably had one of the better written titles with Hawkman, his work on Freedom Fighters, which was criminally underrated and unfortunately not given the credit and the notice it deserves, with amazing art by Eddie Burroughs on Freedom Fighters. And he did, of course, a long stellar run on Green Lantern and his work on Justice League. What he would have to say about Superman, I certainly wouldn't have an objection to that. The only, but he would, I would say that he would be my third choice, though. He would probably be third or fourth choice, only because there's, I mean, and by the way, that's a high compliment, because there's a lot of great writers out there, so that's a pretty high compliment. It's, I guess at the end of the day, when it comes to Superman, sometimes just having a little bit of fresh blood, it's sort of like a hockey team hiring a new coach. You know, it's not that you couldn't hire the assistant coach, or you could promote the assistant coach, but then you're still getting the same team with the same ideas. You know what I mean? So sometimes getting somebody fresh in that you know had ideas, you know, Mark Waid to me is that Mark Waid's got something to prove here. And this isn't just about me having a Mark Waid fixation. Mark Waid himself has got something he wants to show. Mark Waid himself has been waiting for this. And, you know, I know there's a lot of detractors of Mark Waid, but you know what? I'll take a bullet for him on this one. I'm so looking forward to what I need Mark Waid to be on this title. And look, I was defending Bendis when Bendis came to DC, and have I eaten my words and been attacked by Dark Knight. Dark Knight has attacked me on that, and I was 100% wrong on that. I thought he'd do much better, and I was wrong. I hope I'm not wrong about Mark Waid, or 2021 is going to be it'll still be probably a better year than 2020, but my fingers are crossed.
Yeah, it's so interesting, too, because when you think about it, you know, Mark Waid left DC. He kind of butted heads with Dan Didio, and he left, and he said he would never work for DC again. And a lot of it stemmed with, you know, he was supposed to get Superman, and then turned out Grant Morrison got it instead, and there was some bad feelings there or whatever. And now Dan's gone, and Mark Waid, he came back. He did the Superman story that Rocky and I both loved in last stories of DCU. And what I don't want to happen is Mark Waid to come on Superman, have it be a success, and all the people start throwing shade Dan's way. Like, if Dan was still there, Mark Waid, he would still want Mark Waid to be on Superman. Dan was always fan first, and you know, I know there was bad blood, and it you know, decisions are made, and sometimes it's not all, you know, on one person. You got input, and certainly now at DC, you got a lot more input from the devil, Pamela Lyford, and AT&T, you know, higher execs, and trying to make money. Somehow DC Comics has to bail out AT&T from the $155 billion debt they have, making a stupid decision buying DirecTV when everybody and their mother's cutting their cord. I just don't want that. I don't want people to blame Dan and say, hey, look at this amazing Superman run. We finally got Mark Waid on Superman. It's all Dan's fault that we didn't get this this sooner. So it's probably inevitable if it happens. But I hope it doesn't for Dan's sake, because Dan's a good guy.
Yeah, well, you know what? At the end of the day, I think that we all have to realize that these writers and creators and artists for comic books, they're human beings, and they're flawed human beings like the rest of us. And, you know, every now and then we got to step back and, you know, obviously none of them are perfect, and they're subjected to a great deal of scrutiny all the time. We criticize them, we talk about them, we love them, we hate them, we everything in between. Even Bendis, I mean, good Lord, that guy's taken so many bullets. And even though I might not be a big fan of his Superman, he's still a human being. He's a kind person. He's a loving person. He's a family man. And that's one thing I do when I look at 2020, you know, keeping things positive here. You know, we all love this hobby. We love comic books, and it's a distraction for us. And, you know, what we look to our fiction to bring us comfort in times of difficult times. And 2020 has been a real bitch. It's been a real bitch in the real world. And we like to be able to escape into a fictional world from time to time. And I like, especially you and I, guys like us, we've collected comics our whole life. Comic books are a safe haven. They're literally another world that we can escape to. And it bothers us when they're not being written well. It bothers me when I don't feel that comic publishing companies are not taking it seriously and they're just focused on the bottom line. It bothers me when I hear that AT&T didn't bother to talk to the directors of the movies that they're just right away relegating to home streaming services. It bothers me when you ignore the human factor. And I'm guilty of it myself from time to time for maybe being a little bit hard on creators sometimes in my review. And it's sort of a wake-up call to all of us that, you know, we love this hobby, but at the same time, you know, let's keep it civil.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. I mean, I feel the same way, especially Bendis. You know, it's my favorite superhero, Superman, you know, my favorite character. But I have strongly disliked the entire run from the beginning, right? But when I met Brian, when I finally had a chance to meet him in person, 2018 at New York Comic Con, you know, got a chance to meet him face to face, to talk to him personally. Also attended a lot of the panels that he hosted there. A lot of it was focused on the new imprint Wonder Comics and all the stuff that was coming out. Naomi, which I totally credit David Walker for that title being readable. And again, I'm not trying to pick on Brian, but you know, a lot of that other stuff, it was okay. I think Wonder Twins, Mark Russell was really great. The Young Justice was kind of okay. But here's the thing, like, even though I don't feel like Bendis has been doing his best work since he's come over to DC, what I came away with in meeting him personally and attending those panels was how much that man loves comics and how infectious his love of comics is. You cannot talk to that man about comics and not immediately want to go and read some comics. Yeah. So, you know, we say it all the time on the Comic Source podcast, nobody sets out to make a bad comic. And it's something to keep in mind, even though, you know, I to go back to our point of comic journalism earlier, and we got to stay objective. You know, we want people to be able to, you know, listeners and comic fans to be able to trust us that we're not, you know, the corporate shills that are just handing out 10 out of 10s like their Halloween candy. So I hope Bendis moves on to something else and embraces it and does a good job with it. I think he needs to do a little less. I think that maybe that's why his writing hasn't been as good the last few years. It's because he's stretched too thin. Focus on one or two books. Don't even be curating things or contributing to other things. Just focus on one or two books and do the best job that you can. I do feel like we have only talked about DC or been focused on DC, and I know a lot of it's because Rocky's more of a DC guy, but there are rumors that Marvel's going to be doing, kind of having a fresh jumping on point in 2021. You know, going back, we mentioned the Comic-Con experience in Brazil that happened last weekend, virtually, and Tom Brevoort mentioned something on a panel that the Marvel Universe, after the current Phoenix storyline that's going on in the Avengers title, a bunch of things were going to be destroyed in the Marvel Universe and they were going to need a rebirth. Obviously, they're not going to call it rebirth. DC already used that, but there may be.
That's a great idea.
There may be a new, and I'm sure knowing Marvel, it'll come with a bunch of number ones, which I don't begrudge them that, because ever since C.B. Sobolski came on, he really stopped the constant rebooting. So it's been about 5 years since they've had kind of a fresh start, fresh jumping on point. Do you think it's time, Rocky? Do you think it's time for Marvel to say, hey, here's a bunch of new number ones. Here's a great jumping on point for people. Let's do a line wide. You think that's a good, think time is right?
I think it is. And here's where I'm going to fully embrace and admit to being a hypocrite, because as a DC fan, I am intimately familiar with the DC characters and I love the continuity, right? But yet, because I'm not as familiar with the Marvel universe, here I am. Who am I to criticize Marvel for having too much continuity when I love DC, who is just as messy as Marvel, if not more so by many critics. So I admit to my hypocrisy, but having said that, if you're Marvel, if you're Disney and you want to get more people buying Marvel comic books, I'm sorry, but I really love the ideas of Jonathan Hickman's X-Men. I really think it's kind of cool to have Maria McTaggart with the 10 different timelines and living different lives. And there's a great story there, but There's no, I have no, I'm not going to commit to 12 different titles or eight or nine and with no idea when it's going to end.
Yeah.
I can't do that. There's got to be a better way, Marvel. Like, if you could at least give me some hope that this is ever going to end as a story, but they don't, they have no idea themselves, you know? And so I really would appreciate a little bit more. I mean, I have to admit, even DC is a little better at it than Marvel in terms of that, you know, you get some idea with DC when things are going to end. Even Death Metal, I kind of know when it's going to end. I mean, even with some of the timelines for DC, I kind of know when things have an ending. Marvel is always about reestablishing status quos. That's what House of X was, Powers of X was. And I would love to be an X-Men fan, but I just can't do it because they never seem to have an ending. They have this, it's relentless. And Marvel, for me, speaking selfishly, I need a rebirth to get into Marvel. And there's a reason why I have always, for the last 15 years, I have religiously collected Daredevil. I've never missed an issue of Daredevil because I've never had to buy any other Marvel comic to enjoy Daredevil.
Yep.
Marvel should think about that. I'm someone who's got, I've got a disposable, I'm an older white male with a disposable income. I'm more than happy to buy a consistent, well-written comic book that's disconnected. You know, it can be in your Marvel universe, but you know, just give me good stories. Every writer that ever writes Daredevil writes their best. Mark Waid did some of his best writing on Daredevil. So did Brian Bendis, Chip Zdarsky, everyone who writes Daredevil, even Charles Soule, was decent. Everybody who writes Daredevil does a stellar job. Frank Miller. I mean, it's to me, it's astonishing that Marvel doesn't have more self-contained titles. They need it. They need a rebirth. They need to start from, maybe not start over, but they need to make it more accessible because it's, to me, it's just it's just too much. I don't know. What do you think? Like, you're more of a Marvel guy.
Yeah. And I really fell away from Marvel when they started all the constant reboots. Cause growing up, I would flip back and forth. Sometimes I was buying more Marvel titles. Sometimes I was buying more DC titles. And then there came a point where I just kind of settled on the creators and the titles that I liked. So I always bought Hulk. That was the Peter David era. I always bought Iron Man. I always bought Amazing Spider-Man and Web of Spider-Man. Those were, and Captain America. Those were kind of my main. I never got too much into Fantastic Four or Thor or the Avengers or Defenders or any of those kind of things. And then over on the DC side of things, Superman, Green Lantern, Legion of Superheroes, and Batman, those were kind of the titles that I never really got too much into Daredevil. Ghost Rider, when it was out, was also another one. But when I really I various times in college and after I fell away from comics, when dipped my toe back in, usually when I dipped my toe back in, it was just Superman or cross-gen. I got really into cross-gen, other independent titles. But when I really came back to the hobby big time in 2010, it was easier for me to get into DC because I felt like I had a better understanding. I didn't know exactly what was going on with Marvel. And then not too long after I get back into DC, we get the New 52, 2011. So then I really didn't need to know what I had missed, you know, the previous 5, 6, 7 years, because everything was new. And eventually I did go back and discover the things that I missed, but I couldn't do that with Marvel. I mean, I did read Civil War, but everything else, it just felt like too much, like you said. And so I've never gone back and really gotten that into Marvel, but I've picked up various titles here or there. And when I think about the titles that I'm reading right now, they are the more self-contained titles. Like you said, like I'm a big Charles Soule fan. So when he got onto Daredevil, I started reading Daredevil. I'm a big Hulk fan. That was one that I always picked up, but wasn't sure where to jump on. And I actually got on Hulk with that Mark Waid run that he did. And then Jerry Dugan took over. And then now, you know, the Al Ewing run, again, self-contained. I don't have to read anything else. I have been reading Just Amazing with Nick Spencer because you don't necessarily need to read the other Spider-Man titles. And there really aren't any other Spider-Man titles right now other than the Miles Morales stuff. So that's sort of self-contained now, although I'm ready for Nick Spencer to either move on or start telling a different story. He's been telling the same story since Amazing Spider-Man 1, and we're on like issue 53. It's still Kindred. It's still the Kindred storyline. Like, enough of dragging this out already. I've been enjoying Kelly Thompson's Captain Marvel run, and that one's a one that does dip its toe into other things, crossover with was it the Empire event or whatever. I didn't read anything else. I just focused on that. But again, for the most part, it's been pretty insular. So yeah, I agree with you. The Marvel titles that are speaking to me are the ones where I can just read that title and I don't need to read anything else. Daredevil, Hulk, Amazing Spider-Man. I've been reading the Spider-Woman title, the Black Widow title by Kelly Thompson. She's the one that also writes Captain Marvel. And it has great art, Adam Hughes covers. That Black Widow title has been really good. I agree with you. If Marvel wants me to read, you know, Avengers or really Captain America and dive more into their core titles, then yeah, I am going to need a reboot. I mean, as much as I like Donny Cates, I'm not going to read Venom. I'm not going to read Thor. I'm not going to jump into this giant King of Black series. The sprawl of their events is out of control. And I know Death Metal is kind of sprawling as well. And I'm not buying all of Death Metal either. Both publishers need to stop with the sprawl. Part of the reason I'm enjoying the Endless Winter event right now from DC is because I know it's these nine, issues, and that's it. And that's an old school comic event crossover that doesn't need to, you know, to have a bunch of stuff that I need to read. So doing things like that for me, having things more self-contained, yeah, I'm much more likely to dive in if that's the case. And I know, like, Manny's another person who, you know, he's like, yeah, I feel like I have a good grasp of DC now. I've been, you know, pretty hard DC fan for, 10 years or so. I want to get more into Marvel, but I just don't know where to start. So a restart, a refresh, a relaunch, whatever you want to call it, for me, you know, now's the time. That'd be another. Iron Man from Christopher Cantwell, I should mention too, that just started is another one that, you know, Iron Man has been one of those titles where you couldn't really read it on its own. Tony Stark is so instrumental. Christopher Cantwell's taking it back to his basics, and he's bringing Korvac back, who is a criminally underused villain in the Marvel Universe. So I highly recommend that as well. But speaking of crossovers, reminded me not to shift the focus off of Marvel, because we'll see. We don't know if these rumors are true or not. We'll have to wait and see, and we'll certainly talk about it when we have more info. But speaking of crossovers, my book of the week last week, Rocky, was crossover number 2 from Donny Cates, that Image series. Have you been reading his Image series? If not, man, I highly recommend it. It's so good.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I read it. As a matter of fact, I read crossover number 2 yesterday. I read it. I think it's great. I think it's interesting. It's almost one of those plot lines that I'm surprised it hasn't been done already, because it sounds like a plot line that you'd think would have been done already.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been, and it's very well done. And I'm curious to see where Donny Cates takes it. And I like the way that he's breaking the fourth wall, and he's mentioning other writers in it. And it's really infusing our world into that fictional world, and vice versa. And it's just a really fun read. And I don't know. There's that lawyer side of me that thinks, from the legal side, he must be getting permission from the various people to, yeah. They must all be in on the joke, because, you know, cause he talked about issue 3 and issue 6 being ones that are must buy. He's passionate about it. He's promoting those issues. He says issue 3 is going to be a big issue. So I'm curious to see, is Superman going to be in that issue, or is, I don't know, some other famous character that he's written. He's already talked about Valifax and some of his own, that Valifax, the sword from his God Country series is going to be in it, and there's going to be a number of things. He's going to make a number of allusions to other characters on other properties, and so I love that. I love when I that's the type of cooperation and collaboration between creators that I love to see. A great story that you know spreads the love and utilizes some of these other characters from other series. This crossover has all the elements of something that could really build an audience.
Yeah, and I agree with you, especially because that word you use, fun. That's the thing. You can tell not only is Donnie passionate about this story, he's having fun. He's having fun with comics. And the reason he's bringing in all these other references to other things is because he loves comics. He loves those other things. He loves DC characters. He loves Marvel characters. And the only kind of copyright thing that I heard about, because again, I mean, he must be talking to somebody to be able to use these references. But in the first issue, I think it was right on the first page, there's a character that the way he was colored originally made him look a little bit like Captain Marvel, like Shazam from the DC universe, because he had like a yellow lightning bolt and a red costume. And I think they changed it where he's blue and gray now instead of red and kind of yellow or red and gold. And I don't know if somebody from DC said something before it got went to print, or if they just decided, this may be a bridge too far. It may look a little too close to.
I want to give a quick shout out to the character. There's that child character that looks like a Lichtenstein photograph in crossover one and two, and she's one of the lead characters. But she's got that like dotted, like the dots on her face, like the way comic books were printed in the 1960s. And Lichtenstein was, of course, that famous artist who plagiarized artists, unnamed artists, in the 60s and 70s. And I actually have a Lichtenstein display in my house. I've got like huge. I've got big full wall Lichtensteins in my house. I should show it in my basement. It's awesome. I didn't know Lichtenstein was a plagiarist, but but anyways, I really, when I saw her character, that's what really made me love that first issue, because it was like it's just cool because it seems to be incorporating everything we love about comic books from different eras, the different artistic styles. And who's the artist? I should have the
Jeff Shaw, I believe, is the artist.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Same artist as on God Country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does a really good job, because he does a really good job conveying that sense that it's a different kind of world with different varied characters. Very, very well done.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, Rocky, thanks so much for your time, man. It's been great to kind of reminisce and talk about the positives of 2020 instead of focusing on the negatives. As we're wrapping up here, I think a lot of the Christmas, forgive me if I'm mistaken here, but I think a lot of the Christmas traditions up there in the Great White North in Canada are a lot of the same ones we have here in America. Is Christmas a big deal at your house for you, your wife, and your kids?
It is, of course. Yeah, it is. We love Christmas. It is. I'm in Alberta here, Alberta, Canada. We're Alberta right now is kind of, we're under a lot of fire because we've done a terrible job with COVID and we're under severe restrictions. So we can't even, my parents actually live three doors down from me, and we can't even visit them for Christmas. There's like $1,000 fines for even visiting households here. It's ridiculous, but I mean, I understand. I understand it has to be done. I'm just, you know, we're all just frustrated with it all. So today we spent a lot of, you know, I'm building thumbnails, and we're communicating through Zoom and through FaceTime and what have you. And we're making the most out of Christmas. It is going to be a little bit, we have to be creative this year. We can't do our Chinese gift exchange because we can't all be in the same room together with the whole family. Mm-hmm. We all love each other, and we're gonna do what we have to make it fun, and we're gonna drop off presents on driveways, and you know what? It's gonna be a unique Christmas, but you know the pandemic isn't gonna get the best of us, and we're gonna make the most out of it, and yeah, we'll have a fun time. What about you guys? Is there restrictions there on your end?
You know, Arizona is more of a what we call a purple state now. You know, we did lean toward the President Biden this year. We're one of the battleground states. So many people from California, like myself, that are relocating here. Phoenix is a growing urban area with a lot of firms relocating from Silicon Valley because land here is cheap, especially little ways north of here, a town called Chandler. It's becoming this mecca of tech. And so it's been good, but there's still a lot of conservative people here. So the mask wearing hasn't been up to snuff. And our I feel like our governor hasn't done a great job either of you know, he's never enforced a mask mandate or even encouraged one. So numbers here were terrible for a long time. They've gotten a lot better. People are taking it upon themselves. And most people are wearing masks now, certainly in the city of Phoenix, the mayor has imposed a mask mandate. So the numbers are not great. You know, schools are closed, but restaurants are still open for indoor dining, which I know is a big risk. And certainly we take it much more seriously than that. We only leave the house when it's absolutely necessary to go to the grocery store and such. So kind of the same way. I mean, my mom lives here. She's not three doors down, but she lives, you know, less than 10 minutes away. We didn't even go over to her place for Thanksgiving. We won't see her at Christmas. Kind of the same thing. You know, she's in the, you know, that upper age bracket that's at a much higher risk for severe complications. And, you know, I just want her to be safe, you know, and Rocky and I, we both want all you listeners to be safe. So in whatever way you're celebrating Christmas, please just do it responsibly, be safe. I'm happy to hear, Rocky, that, you know, even though you can't spend Christmas with your parents, at least they're healthy and your family is healthy. But yeah, for us, we're just, again, we're doing the best we can. All credit to my wife. She's a huge fan of Christmas. You can see I'm in my wife's office recording this.
There's a Christmas tree behind you there.
Yeah. So this is one of four full-size Christmas trees we have in the house. Every room in the house, even the bathrooms have Christmas trees. In my bathroom, the master bathroom, there's two Christmas trees in the bathtub up on pedestals. We have one in the main room. She's got one in my studio. There's one in a full-size one in our master bedroom. My daughter has one on her dresser. The bathrooms all have their own little, she's got a Christmas village. A couple of trees have Christmas trains that go around them. She likes to go all out. And I encourage that. I love that she is so passionate about Christmas. We got a bunch of blow-ups in the front yard and icicles, and everything's connected through Alexa and, you know, turn on Christmas Home. And
that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Christmas season.
Yeah. And the one thing that we're really going to miss this year is the other thing that we do is we always throw a big Christmas and we call it Christmas cookies and cocktails for all our friends here in Phoenix. And everybody comes over, and cause she does a lot of baking and people come over and have a nice drink and you know, eat cookies and just enjoy the season. Obviously we're not doing that this year because we don't want to spread the virus around. So that's going to be the toughest part for us, just not seeing friends and such. So again, that's why Rocky and I wanted to do this. And again, Rocky, thanks for coming on. Encourage everybody, go to YouTube, look for Comic Boom exclamation point, give him a follow, give him a subscribe, check out his content. It's worth your time. But yeah, we just wanted to come on and give something back to all the people that support us on our various content channels that we put out and spread some holiday cheer. So again, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate. I hope it's a safe and wonderful one. And we all look for better days ahead in 2021. So as we wrap up here, Rocky, any last thoughts?
I want to focus on hope, you know, hope for a better tomorrow, and let's enjoy the Christmas season. Let's make the most of it. And, you know, this is a test of adversity for all of us, I think, during these difficult times, and regardless of our ideologies, our political stripes, or what comic books we love or hate, you know, it is the season of compassion, kindness, and you know, there's an old expression that whenever you're feeling down, go out and help somebody, you know, pay it forward, enjoy it. And let's say a prayer for Mark Waite on Superman, because that's going to save 2021.
Maybe DC will announce it on Christmas Day. That'd be one hell of a Christmas present.
That's right. And thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. It's been a good conversation. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a while since we talked, man. So I'm glad we got a chance to do this and catch up.
Right on.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for this special holiday episode of The Comic Source, celebrating the 12 days of The Comic Source. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, we're out.
Good. Okay.
Hope that was good for you. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it was good. I didn't know. I really didn't know what to expect. I realized my wife's name is up on the screen here because my wife uses Zoom all the time. It's My wife's name Coralie.
Got it. All good. I did kind of wonder because I got when I first sent the invite out, I was actually on my way to my daughter's holiday dance recital. So normally they put on this big show and everybody goes to an auditorium or whatever. So instead they can't do that because it's the one social activity we let her still do. She has to wear a mask the whole time and they take everybody's temperature every time she goes to class and hand sanitizer and wash them down before they go in. But we got to go. They did five shows because there's only like 10 chairs or 10 sets of chairs because everybody has to be social distance. So the girls, her and the girls in her dance troupe, they did the show five times because they had to, you know, they could only have, you know, 10 sets of parents in there at a time. So I was on my way over there and I got this email. I'm like, Coralie Jadema, like, why is that person joining my Zoom or trying to join my Zoom? And I was like, So then when we came back and you did get on, I was like, oh, yeah, I figured it was probably your wife.
Well, my wife is, she interacts with the school of my daughter, our daughter's school.
Gotcha.
She's on the Zoom at times. And so I never thought of that because I actually don't use Zoom. All the programs I use, I actually don't use Zoom very much, but my wife does. And so
it's right.
Just one of those things. But anyway. Yeah.
All good. Well, my best to your wife and your kids and have a Merry Christmas, Rocket, if I don't talk to you before then. This is going to go up on, I don't know, sometime starting on Monday, I'm going to start releasing these 12 days. And I'll be sure when this one goes up to tag you and you can retweet for all your subscribers and such.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. No problem. Take care. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.